Why are you making so much money on Fridays?
I just like to go out with a bang.
No, but seriously, why do you think this is? It's your least traded day, but your most profitable day.
Really helpful daily bias tip for me, for an ICT trader, is watch the previous day's daily close. If the previous day's candle closes above the last previous day's, you can have a bias to look for previous day's high to be taken, and vice versa.
Why? Do you know why? Is there a reason for that?
For me, there was a big shift in my trading when I started focusing on target more than entry. There are so many entry signals and there are so many false entry signals. Like my win rate right now, if we pull up the Tradezilla later, it's supposed to be part two.
We got it pulled up right here.
Oh, okay.
13.5% win rate.
Yeah.
You do take the cake for the lowest win rate in the Black Shirt Club ever. And we didn't say this, everybody. Zach's already been paid out. I won't say the exact number for privacy, but over five figures this year from Top Step, just from his futures account in 2 months. You didn't do this when you first started.
No, that's why this is so important, tracking these stats, because once you have a bit of an edge and like a technical edge, the real work comes in just refining that edge with these little things, tweaking little things here and there.
I want to continue to be part of this group because I believe in the A1, the A2, and I believe that everybody here is trying to get better as a trader. So that's what I love about being in the group. It's not necessarily about any one specific strategy. I mean,
what's up, traders? Welcome back to the podcast. We are in New York City, in Brooklyn, sitting down with two Black Shirt Club members and my co-host, Evan Dyer. Today, I want to share the journey that these two guys have gone through, not just in the Black Shirt Club, our mentorship group, but just as traders. Andrew has only 8 months of experience. Zach is almost on his third year. Zach has also been paid out over five figures already this year from his futures trading. So there's a lot to learn. So enough out of me. Let's get into the studio and make it happen. I hope you're enjoying today's video. Just want to give a shout out to the sponsor, Top One Trader. If you're looking to get funded, I've got a link and a discount code for you down below that's going to save you big bucks on your next funding challenge. So thank you to Top One. Now let's get back to the video. All right, traders, welcome back to the podcast. So we've got another in-person episode today. We are in the studio. I've got three fantastic traders today. We're going to do a two-part episode. So for the next 2 hours or so, we're going to lock in and dive deep into what you boys are doing well. And hopefully you guys can share some knowledge, some insights, some values to the audience, not just about the Black Shirt Club and our mentorship in ASFX, but just about trading as a community, getting feedback, getting ideas from other people, and how you can grow through that. All three of you, I've worked with you for a while, at least a year now for each of you. So close to a year for you. Yeah, you're the newbie out of everybody. So I know you guys pretty well. We've got Tradezilla pulled up here on the iPad. You guys will probably see some stuff flying in throughout the episode where we're going to look at their stats, my stats, even probably roast some of our other Black Shirt Club members and their stats. We might have to roast ourselves some days, Andrew. But this is going to be fun. So let's go around first and say hello. Evan, introduce yourself real quick.
Well, hopefully you've already seen me before. I've been on the podcast a few times, but Evan Dyer, been trading for about 5 years now, coming up in about a few months. Been part of ASFX for now 3 years, I think. Mm-hmm. Four. Mm-hmm. 2019, October, I believe, right after you started it.
Time flies.
But that was just from like a student perspective, and then more recently been working with Austin for about a year and a half. And then, yeah, just kept on making my way up towards the top and working alongside you now more and more. But yeah, I'm from North Jersey, so not too far of a trip out here, but I like being here.
Yeah,
I like
being good.
Filming with the guys, but then also just trading every day in the same group for now over a year, like I said. You get to see all the new faces, the same faces, and get to like build friendships from people all over the place.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, Zach.
What's up, guys? I'm Zach from New York City. I've been trading about 3 years. I've been a member of the Black Shirt Club. Well, it's only been a few weeks now.
You're back in the elite.
But I'm
now.
Back.
You were in the Black Shirt Club. What was it, 2023, right? It
2023,
wasn't
last year, basically.
Yeah.
And really loved it, loved the community. The personal connections you can make with everyone. And yeah, I just wanted to come back to get that again because I was missing that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Also, before we go to Andrew, everybody here trades differently. Very discretionary in some ways. ICT is going to be discussed today. just pure technical price action trading. That'll be discussed. So you're going to get a wide range of inputs as we go through. So I think that'll be really valuable. Last but not least,
Andrew Rohack from South Jersey, not too far off from where you made your homestead.
Jersey.
And I've been trading for about 8 months now, since about August. And that's totally green when I came into the club. So I just keep re-upping because I love being a part of the group. And, really have found a large interest in this. I don't know why it just didn't come around, across my desk sooner. But it's been a lot of fun, and I love being part of this group.
Why are you shaking your head?
It is crazy that it's been 8 months.
Is that too long or not long enough?
Not long. Like, when I was 8 months in, I was probably still on baby pips. I don't think I found you yet. No one's where they want to be yet, but 8 months, it's like, Jesus Christ, I was terrible.
Well, you got to understand, I knew Austin before this whole Black Shirt Club was even a thing.
Year before.
Right, so you were maybe just in the early stages of getting into trading, into Forex. And, I met you at a KW Quantum Leap seminar, and you're just like, hey, man, want to go grab a cup of coffee? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I got nothing better going on. And you were like selling me on Forex trading and different ways to get into it. So I never really lost tabs of that. You just caught me at like the wrong time, right? And then, so I had always knew that he was in the space. So I don't have any idea who any of the, you guys talk about some of these other traders, some of these other scams and all that kind of stuff going. I don't know any of that stuff because I didn't investigate the space like that. I just was looking at Austin. I knew that you found a lot of success with the club, and I went directly to you because I wanted to, have a good foundation. One of the things I learned early on in my career was that you need good coaching, you need good mentorship getting into any profession that you're going to do. And I saw the success that you were having with students and what you had built, and I saw that was very attracted to that. I saw that as being a good way for me to get into the space, not try to do it, on my own without any help.
It's still doable on your own.
Absolutely. But you just said, you can't believe it's in 8 months.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be where I'm at today if I were doing it on my own. I'm here because I found a group to work with.
And as we get into the stats and even your statistics especially, it's like, how many traders are 8 months into their career and even have stats to look at? Who's tracking trades 8 months into their career? 8 months into my career, I'm still funding Traders Way accounts for $75, $100, and blowing them every single day, not knowing anything better.
Yeah, right.
So I think you can't measure success when it comes to a business like this in your first 8 months of it, or even if you've been trading like Boris for 30 years, you can't measure his success in an 8 month period. You'll have ups, you'll have downs. So I think you can't just look at P&L. You have to look at, like you said, progress, understanding, how far have you come, Yeah. So me, Andrew, and Evan trade similarly. Zach would be a little bit different for sure.
I'm the black sheep.
The black sheep in the black shirts. So what I want to talk about, I think, first is background. Because each of us have come into trading with a different perspective on money, a different perspective on markets, and a different perspective just on our own self-worth, self-belief, what we think we can accomplish. So originally, when you joined the Black Shirt Club, kind of paint the picture for what you were doing at that time and what brought you into the idea of like, I want to be not just making money trading, I want to be doing it at a level that professionals are doing it.
At the point that I joined the Black Shirt
Club
for the first time. Yeah. So I was about a year in.
Okay.
1 year in and really struggling. I got started with crypto. So okay. I was trading those leveraged crypto exchanges, 100x leverage, and just blowing accounts, like you said, left and right. Did not look at percentages or risk or anything. And honestly, I feel really blessed to have found prop firms because I did not even think about risk management until prop firms came around. So got into prop firms, got into FX, and you were one of the first people that I saw that was...
Because I spray my content all over the internet.
You're everywhere, man. And you really made sense, though. A lot of people, they talk about Lambos and mansions.
Well, my Lambo's outside, two of them.
Oh shit!
Vince had one, and I had one.
Well, you're good at hiding it, man. You talk about real trading, and that's what I was naturally attracted to. So that's what made me want to join.
And at that time, I want everyone to understand your background. I think the prop firm stuff in our second hour. I think the first hour we'll talk more about like entries and technical stuff like that, psychological stuff. We'll do because we could talk about the prop firm stuff for literally an hour or longer. At that time, when you joined the first 12-week stretch, you were not trading ICT at all.
No.
So no. You came into ASFX, you were just looking for a technical foundation, and you did find some success with the A2 and the A1 stuff. What then, because people are going to be thinking instantly, why did you then go for more?
I think, I don't really know, man. I just still at that point was really interested in learning as much as I could. I just wanted to, even if I wasn't going to pick a strategy, I would watch strategy videos and just, I think I became more attracted to going for the lower win rate, higher risk reward. Because the A2, you know, it's a one-to-one. You want to focus on a higher win rate, which is great. And I definitely was finding some success with that. But I think it's just my personality. There's a big thing that I want my stops to be small. And I want to know if I'm going to lose quickly. Because I don't want to sit in a trade and let it chop around. And I feel like I could just get out and get back in later. I feel like if I'm tied into a trade for 3 hours, like chopping around break even or a little bit of profit, I just feel like my time can be better spent finding a better opportunity or just waiting.
Yeah.
So that's just, I was just attracted to that more. So I found SMC.
Is that different than ICT?
It's the same. It's kind of like a rebranded version.
Okay.
But same idea. But that's where I learned the basic concepts. And it just spoke to me a little more. And yeah, I just ran with that. And that's been working for me.
So let's do this, since now we've kind of described what you're trading now. Why don't you take a second and talk about how you trade?
Yeah, so I would definitely agree that I don't prefer to sit in a trade for a long time, sit in some chop, and potentially walk away with nothing. So the idea of telling me I'm a loser quick, I'd prefer that. But for me, I just know personally I can't lose more times than I win. I mean, I'd like to not, but sometimes it'll happen. But I need a higher win rate just so I could trade better. I know that if I could take as little amount of losses as I can, then that's just going to set me up to trade better because I'll be less emotional, be more process focused rather than if I just keep on taking losses. Although I know it'll be profitable at the end because I have a higher risk reward, I still just psychologically, I need to feel the winning more than I lose.
Now, before you go, Andrew, how do you respond to that? Tracking your trades has never been more important, and it's also never been easier with TradeZilla. Shout out to Umar and their team for being a sponsor of today's video. We love the product. I use it in the Black Shirt Club every day in the mentor mode. I use the backtesting and playbook section as well. I use it for my own trading. It helps me make improvements. It's the cute little calendar that everybody likes to see when I post my P&L. If you want to start using TradeZilla, use the link in the description, use the discount code down below, save 10% on either your monthly or your yearly membership, start tracking your trades today. It's gonna help you make more money, it's gonna help you know where you need to make improvements, even if it's something as small as, hey, I'm losing a lot of money on Tuesdays, let's figure out why am I losing money on Tuesdays? Let's figure out what time of day, what instrument, what asset, all of that and more can be found in TradeZilla. So if you're not a big tracking journaling guy, just let TradeZilla automate and do it all for you. Plus, you save some money when you use the link and the discount code down below. So thanks again to TradeZilla. Let's get back to the video.
I get it. I definitely get it. The thing about how I use the tight stops, though, I almost don't look at taking one or two of those really small losses as a loss. It's almost like I'm just still working out my idea. Like, as long as I profit from the idea by the end of the day, it's a winning trade. So I just treat the loss is just not as significant to me. And it's, you know, I don't get attached to it. And yeah, so I get it. But I feel like I kind of have the same philosophy. I just go about it in a different way.
Interesting. Because you're saying as long as the idea of the trade originally is not invalid, you'll feel it out. And when we look at your stats, we can see that. So you'll feel it out without taking a big hit to then still see that original idea come to fruition. Where would you say maybe you're trying to time the market a little bit better so you don't have to take the drawdown and take the small losses in the waiting of the win?
It's almost like, okay, I'm not going to be potentially early, take a small cut, another small cut. Okay, now I'm on time. And then when it's on time, you're going to make enough to recover those losses. I get that. But for me, I'm just trying to be, I see the move potentially coming, but now let me just pick my spot that have the highest probability of it's going to win from here. The timing is now correct. And then, like I said, it all works out. You could have a 20% win rate or an 80% and you could both make money. So if I have to choose one, I'd rather have an 80% win rate, but everyone's definitely different.
Let's go to you. Tell us how you trade.
Well, real quick, what I find funny is that it's like you guys both have, like, well, having watched your trades for the past couple of weeks now that you're back in the group and knowing how Evan trades, like Evan's trade, like there's like a stamp on it. Like you just know it's Evan's trade when you see it. If he's not at the desk, you're like, oh, well, Evan probably be taking that trade, like, you know, when it presents. And with his style of trading, it's like he's got to wait for the exact moment to get in where it's like you'll just like fire like 10 arrows off, mm-hmm. right? And at some point you'll catch the right moment, but you know that you're going to get into that trade. And I'm like caught in the balance between the two of you because I love that. Like, I know this is going to go up. I want to get in here. No, that's too early. And then like, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes later, it's like I might have taken a bunch of stabs at it. I wasn't wrong. I just kept taking the wrong trade to get to that point. Where it's like with you, it's like, you know when to get into the trade. You're so confident in when you're going to get into it, and you have such an even keel approach to it that I admire and I love because, you know, again, you're not so emotionally tied to the fact that you might be in drawdown. It's like, well, I might have been early, but I can just sit through this. I've given it the space, and you know, I'm not wrong. I'm just a little early, but I've put the trade on properly for me to be in it. And I'm caught between the two of you because, as you know, man, okay.
Here we go.
Oh, God.
When I first got into the group, I was all about the A1 and the A2. And Evan was my coach coming into the group. And he'll tell you, I sent you markups like 40 times a day. Is this an A1? Is that an A1? Is this an A1? Is that an
A1? For the record, is a huge piece of why you're becoming successful as a trader, is because you do a lot of the legwork. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah,
of his coach?
Yeah, it's because of his coach.
Yeah, thanks.
But yeah, I mean, we had just a lot of different conversations about trying, you know, I wanted to make sure that I was seeing things properly on the screen and, you know, with the technicals involved. And, you know, it was early on, it was looking for a lot of that right entry with the proper break, retest, A1 setup or the A2 off of a zone or a level. And, you know, that was working for a time. And then we started bringing in VWAP. So like, again, it's, and this kind of goes to what you were talking about, Zach, where like you started looking at smart money concepts and all that kind of stuff and branching out. You know, it's not that I don't believe in the A1 or the A2. They're very, very viable ways to trade. But I feel like there's so many other ways to skin the cat, so to speak. It's like, yeah, I want to explore everything so that I have all the information. Because, and I know you'll tell me, you will attest to this, and I know you will as well, Ev, but I see the chart perfectly fine. It's not that I don't see the trades. I just have a big mental issue, you know?
Issue?
Issue? Yeah.
Not plural.
Issues.
Oh, issues. You're right. Yeah, yeah. There's more than one.
I'm just being funny.
No, you're right.
So this is good because this kind of leads to the first section of questions I wanted to talk about, which is entry signal. Mm-hmm. And you just said you think there's multiple ways to skin the cat. I agree. Mm-hmm. So where do you think profitable trading is made? In the entry signal? In the exit? In the trade management, in the position size?
Trade management. Yeah.
Why?
Because I've traded 0.1%, I've traded 2%. The trade ends the same. It's with 0.1%, it's easy to be like, I'm up $30 on this trade. It's past 1R, just close it now. Like, what's the point of me trying to squeeze any more out of this? I should have had more size on this. And then I add 1% onto a position and it starts, you know, it goes up, hits 1R, I want to hang on to it, I don't trail the stop. Like, all sorts of things go wrong. Next thing you know, I'm now in drawdown because I didn't take profits when I was at 1R, whereas if it was like 0.1%, I'd imagine it managed it totally differently. And that's where I struggle right now, is it doesn't matter about the size, it really is what the chart's telling me. And I just cannot, when depending on the size, the risk that I have on, I cannot get myself to manage the trade properly. Like just the same every single time, and it's really frustrating.
We'll come back to that. Yeah. What do you guys think? Trade management, entry signal, what makes profitable trading?
I think it's a multitude of everything.
Sure.
But, you know, for me, this is actually very interesting because for me, there was a big shift in my trading when I started focusing on target more than entry. So a lot of trading strategies focus around the entry, and a lot of newer traders are like, I need to trade with a good entry signal. Give me the entry signal. It's there are so many entry signals and there are so many false entry signals. So what worked for me is actually identifying my target where I think price can go. In ICT terms, we'll call it the draw on liquidity. Identifying that first is key for me to then focus on my entry like more naturally, like the entry comes naturally once I have my target.
Makes sense. Yeah. I do understand that. What do you think?
I would say going off like your recent trading, you would say that it was just like, it's risk management or like trade management, because not that they're bad setups, but if you give a good trader an okay setup, he could probably find a way to pull some money out of it, which you have done recently. They're not bad trades, but when it's like a counter move or no one sees the signal, but you're like, I like this price, I can see where we can go. That's not really a play that's high probability, let's say, but you still find a way to make money out of it. Where if you give someone that's struggling trading a good setup, like, hey, get in here, like he mentioned on, they cannot take profit and come back, and you didn't make money, but it was a good setup. So who cares how good the setup was? You didn't make money out of it. Where you took maybe, let's say, a lesser trade, you could still pull money out of it, even if it's not 1 hour, it's half an hour, and that's profitable. Do that enough times. So I think it's not always the entry signal, because many times we've seen people take the exact same trades, but they all get out at different points, and some people make more, less, nothing. So it's like, okay, well, it can't be the signal. It's how you managed it. So I would say it's definitely like how you execute the trade once you're in. Mitigating that risk, taking your profits, all that emotional stability.
It's a good point. I would think, you made me think of me and Andrew had an Eskimo Brothers situation a couple of weeks ago where he's in a trade and I know what he's thinking, and I messaged you at 12:28 at the exact top. It was like very close to your 1 hour. And yeah, I was like, Andrew, taking some off here?
Yeah, I remember.
And then you're in the group chat, so you're in the live. You're not reading the chat. You don't see my message. I'm on a coaching call with whoever.
He's in the live with me.
With you.
He's saying I should probably take profits here.
He's knowing he should take profits.
You're sending the message. He's telling me.
I'm saying it to him.
Probably should be taking profits here, shouldn't you? Like, nah.
Well, let's just use that as a highlight for the coaching program, because that's where, like, if you were trading on your own, you hear yourself think that, but it's very easy to disregard it.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's right. Now it's coming back to me a little bit more. I remember you had said it, like, you probably could take profits here. And I had mentioned it to you after the fact, like, 30,000 times in my subconscious, I heard it saying, take profits, take profits.
And what did it do?
Close the trade. Oh, no, I used my idiot side of the brain and just said, nah, it's just going to keep going.
Yeah, it's just greed.
Today's going to be like, a runner.
It's going to.
Greed does show its head in many different ways in trading. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I think that trade itself is a good example of where experienced traders can guide new traders. And you've been through it. Like, I've been through that so many times. You just know. And that's why, like you just said, sometimes I'll take these trades that'll move in 3 minutes on SPX or on ES now. They'll move 0.7R. Well, let's just use easy numbers. If I'm risking 1,000, now I'm up, in theory, 700. That's 1,700 of risk. If I don't take any off quickly there, I can give back gains that should really be mine.
Yeah.
So I think it becomes over time, like you touch the hot, this is just my perspective. You touch the stove enough, you stop trying to like trade perfectly, and instead you just trade to make money. As a dirty, you have to almost, I know this might sound not professional to some of the listeners, but you almost need to embrace the dirty, degenerate day trader attitude of like, I don't know where the market's going. I'm just here to make money.
Right.
And if the market's gonna give me a win, why would I want to push for more when it's handing me free money?
Well, like even, you know, the recent podcast listening to with Tim Sykes, where he talks about a lot of his guys, like he's got, you know, some big time traders. And then he's, you know, he himself and a few other guys, like it's like they're just trading for like $200-$300 a day. And like they're good with that. And you talk about that all the time. Like just end the day green. Like I don't care if you're up $20 or $200 or $20,000. Like just trade to end the day green.
You know what that helps too with? Now when I lose like $200 or $300 or $500 or even $1,000, it doesn't bother me as much because I've had so many winning days stack up of like the 600, the 1500, the 1700, the 2000. Okay, down 1,000. If I got 2 days left in the week, I probably can recover that. I know myself.
And I can see that starting to translate where it's like, as the numbers get bigger, it's like, you know, you start making 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 on the trades, then you start worrying less about the 1,000, 2,000, $3,000 drawdowns. And the other thing for me about, you know, referencing that trade that I took was I was definitely trading the P&L too. I was looking at the drawdown that I had. I was looking at trying to pass this challenge. I'm looking at like...
We just worked on this with him last week.
And I was just going to say, I imagine you probably have a bit of the same issue where it's like if you take...
Too many losses.
15 losses before you get that one win.
You'll and you'll try to make all of those losses back.
Exactly. In that one
trade. Huge common mistake.
So, and that's where like, I'm like, what goes through your head? Like how many times have you finally got to that winning trade and, you know, maybe you didn't make, like, do you make as much as you anticipate every single time you take that trade? Or
this has been an issue this last week especially. We were just talking about, you know, I for a while I was going with a standardized risk to reward. I was going with 3.3R every trade. I don't care how far it goes afterwards, all I want is 3.3R. if it goes 1R, I lock my stop. And I think I'm actually, we've been talking about going back to that, because I've been trying to get too many home runs.
Yeah.
And it's exactly that. Like, my win rate right now, if we pull up the Tradezilla later, it's
supposed to be part two.
We got it pulled up right here.
Oh, okay.
13.5% win rate. You do take the cake for the lowest win rate in the Black Shirt Club ever. And we didn't say this, everybody. Zach's already been paid out. I won't say the exact number for privacy, but over five figures this year from Top Step, just from his futures account in 2 months. So he is making money more than he has spent in challenges at a 13% win rate. So what we've been working on, I know it is almost funny. It's like crazy to see because you don't see this that often.
No.
But like what we're trying to do with him is just take away a few of those feeler positions by refining his entry process.
Yeah.
At the same time, if we can do that and then have him realizing gains, because a lot of his trades will go 2 or 3R and he won't take any off, and then because he locked his stop, he ends with a donut.
Yeah.
If we can just fix those two things,
yeah,
not only does his win rate go up, but he's definitely making more money. So even as a profitable trader and at a 13% win rate, he's profitable. There's still growth to be had in those two areas. So it's I don't think if I'm sitting in your shoes, looking at somebody like him who's a little bit more experienced, not a lot more experienced, but a little bit more.
No, but he's got a year on me.
Right. That's a little bit of experience. That's not a lot to me. That's a little bit. Sure. He's a little bit more experienced. I would be looking at that of like, okay, let's tackle this one thing at a time. Right. One thing at a time first. If I'm going to take trades and I'm going to say I'm going to take profit at a certain level, I've got to start realizing the wins and detaching in that sense from the P&L. But this is where we are kind of talking out both sides of our ass, because I'm saying trade the P&L and the day green, but then detach from the P&L and follow good process and take good trades where you could still end the day red, right? Like you could recover on that fifth entry that you'll take, but you won't recover potentially all of the losses from those earlier feeler positions.
It happened on Friday, actually. It's exactly what happened Friday. I drew down a little more than I was comfortable with, but then at the end of the day, I took a CL short and it made back. It was basically a scratch day.
See, I think I can pull up the mark up here too.
Did you put a goal in terms of like where you want him to get his win rate to?
Me?
Yeah, like in terms of like trying to manage
no,
how many.
No, because when I look at him, that's a good question. When I see his trading and we go through, I don't trade ICT, but I understand risk reward.
Yeah.
At the essence of this, before we move on from entry signals, we're all saying things that are accurate, but the essence of it is price. If you're getting it at a price, when you're buying it and you sell it at a higher price, you will make money. You know, that is simplistic, but that's all this is. Mm-hmm. So the ICT, the SMC, the FUCK, whatever you want to trade, whatever strategy you want to, ASFX.
LBTTQ.
Right, exactly, bro. Whatever you want to do, it probably doesn't make that much of a difference, which then defaults me to what Scott Redler taught me, which was like, you want to have a process, like a daily routine that is easy to follow. I apply that to the entry signal. You want to have an entry signal that's easy to follow because the money, like we've just said, is not made in the entry. It is made in the management of the trade. However, to your question, Andrew, if Zach can realize gains, I mean, you can just look at the stats. We'll look at the report in a second. Not even just on this trade, but if you look at the stats, if he just doesn't take any more scratches, he makes more money. Because a lot of his trades are going 1R and then turning around and stopping him for no money. If he took some off there and then got stopped on the rest for no money, I think it was on Thursday, we looked at his two I think it was either Thursday or Wednesday of last week. He had two trades that were going for 3R. They went like two, and they both donutted. And I said, Zach, if you take half off and you donut, what do you do? Well, those two together are like one win.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So it would add more wins to him overall. Right. Will it improve his win rate? Probably not that much, but it's not what I'm trying to do. We're just trying to make money.
Yeah.
There's Paul Tudor Jones used to make 6-to-1 risk reward trades. That was what he would look for. 6-to-1. He had a 20% win rate or less. Mm-hmm. Like he would win one out of five.
And that's what I mean. Like if you like, I see like if you took, like refine the entry. And again, I have 8 months experience, so take this with a grain of salt. Just looking at it statistically, if you took less scratches at it, or you know, just took less shots at that, refine the entry. And instead of taking 10 attempts, you took 5 attempts and got the win rate up to 20%.
Yeah.
And you know, got rid of a couple of $100 losses in there. You know, you'd just be that much more profitable. You're already profitable enough. Like with a 13% win rate, you have a tremendous profitability factor at the moment. So it's just looking at, you know, how can you take this data and make a little more off of it?
Right. Yeah. I think for me, it's going to be in standardizing the risk to reward, because this is actually not, my win rate is usually not this low. It usually hovers around 25 to 30% range if I'm going for a standardized.
Right. So it will increase. I think we will see the win rate go up over the next few months with the club.
Yeah.
I mean, what I would say when you look at like we're now in the reports, and we got to say, shout out to Tradezilla. So if you need a link and a discount code, I'll put one in the description of this video. Everyone should be using it. Even Boris was just sitting here. He uses it. I mean, if you're not using it, you're an idiot. Sorry, it's just the truth. Look at his average win time versus his average hold time here at the bottom. 48 minutes for his average win, 9 minutes for his average loss. He'll scratch out of the trade at 28 minutes on average. But if you look at his largest, where is it here? Largest profit, $1,975, $1,900. Largest loss is only $449.
Yeah.
That proves that he's not only holding his winners longer, almost five times longer than his losers, he's actually making four times or almost five times as much in his winning trades as well. So he can, in theory, take four losses if he keeps them small because his wins are paying.
It's just, I love looking at these stats because it puts in perspective like what's happening in my trading, where it's like I have a 45-50% win rate, but my largest profit, my largest loss, or just average profit, average loss, they're flipped. It's the other way around. I'll make 500, but I'll lose 2,000.
Exactly.
And it's like, all right, I got a great win rate compared to you, and like if that's all you're looking at, that's fine. But sure, like the actual trade itself is crap.
What about total number of trades? 297. Number of winning trades, only 40. 256 losing trades. But he's profitable and getting paid out. And it's motivating. Go ahead.
And a big thing with this too is, like, this sounds like it would be really stressful to manage, but you got to remember I'm executing on the 1 minute time frame.
Yeah.
So this is all happening in the course of a day. So it could be 10 losses and then you get the win, but it's all in one day. It's not like I'm a swing trader where I have to deal with 10 losses over the course of a few weeks, you know? Yep.
Look at this. Max consecutive winning days, 3. Max consecutive losing days, 2. So still more wins in that sense than losses on the days, which is good. You're ending the day green. Total trading days that we have logged here, because we've just started logging here, only 12. Winning days, 7. 5 losing days. So you're still winning the day. Profit factor, 1.1. Oh, yeah. I mean, those stats still contribute to profitable trading. Mm-hmm. I want to go really quick because this is another thing we're going to look at for everybody. Let's look at trade time in Tradezilla, because Zach and I had a nice conversation about this. So what do you guys see here? When you look especially at the right side of the screen for Zach.
Profitability. Trading in the morning.
Stop trading in the morning, Zach.
London session.
It's early, crazy. Early and you know morning. What? Tell everybody what you're trying to trade in the London session that made me want to break my keyboard on Friday.
I've been trading NASDAQ in the London
session. He's trading
session.
NASDAQ at 3 or 4 in the morning.
Get some sleep.
That'll have some volume.
It'll have tons of volume.
That'll have some volume for you.
Not at all. So also, Zach has cut back his hours at his job as he's been making more money from trading, but he still goes to work in the morning. And you can see it right there. Like, the work is distracting you. When you come home and you trade the afternoon, the power hour, he calls it, from like, you know, 3 to 4 is power hour, but really you can see in the stats, it's like 1 to 4. That's your sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah,
where you can come in and find really good trades.
Yeah, it's all I need. I don't need to be forcing myself to trade during London.
So in this conversation of entry signals that we're still kind of using as our first topic for this podcast, looking at stats like this and looking at the time of day that your entry signals are working best, what are we going to do? Sit here and argue about this?
It isn't.
You can't fight.
There's no opinions.
It's just data. That's it. So I think this is another really important thing to look at. And we can also just look really quick. Look at days of the week. He is trading the most on Friday. We don't need to look at that individually. He's trading the most on Friday. If I could get it pulled up here. What happened? We're lagging. Tradezilla is lagging. Trading the most on Friday, as you can see there, but losing the most.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Trading the most and losing the most.
Even Wednesday.
Look at Monday and Tuesday. He's doing the least amount of work and making the most money.
Yeah.
So what does this say? You look at these two things in Tradezilla. Zach should be trading the afternoons, and normally in the beginning of the week, he trades better. Again, this is not years of data. Mm-hmm. When you do this for a year, you're going to feel even more confident in it. So I think it's like really important just not just to highlight what you're doing that's working, but for the listeners that are not doing this. You didn't do this when you first started.
No, that's why this is so important, tracking these stats, because once you have a bit of an edge and like a technical edge, the real work comes in just refining that edge with these little things, tweaking little things here and there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I have a question, and I don't know if it's the same for you. Do you find that by the time you get to Wednesday, it's like you had two good days, and like Wednesday you're like, I got the magic touch, and like you're just like clicking on anything on Wednesday, and then you're like, ah shit, I just lost a bunch, and then you have a good Thursday,
yeah,
And then Friday's right back.
It might be, you know, because I just started using Tradezilla and tracking with that, you know, I only have a few weeks of data. So I'm not sure about Wednesdays. I do know that from my past data with my other trading platform, it was Mondays were always my best day for some reason, mm-hmm. which a lot of people say Mondays are their worst day. And Fridays, I mean, that's like Fridays have always been my least profitable day.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a look at Evan's stats.
Oh, thank God.
Actually, we'll do Andrew first. Since
no, no, no.
Yeah. We'll
go to Ev. Ev hasn't talked.
I don't know where my top step is.
So, Andy, the drawdown here is impeccable. Now, this is across a lot of accounts.
So, yeah, I've got.
I'll let you set the stage for this.
All right. So, how much time you got? I came into the group hot and heavy. I really was like just hard pressed to make this work. So when I decided I was going to start challenge accounts, I bought one, and then 2 weeks later bought a second, and then I think I bought two more after that, and then bought two top one accounts when that came around. So I've had
a lot of accounts.
I've had a lot of accounts.
Yep.
So and I've blown all of them.
And we also went into this knowing we wanted to collect data. We wanted you to trade. We did not want you to be shy. This is a different Tradezilla than Zach's. Yeah. Zach has longer experience. Zach has more confidence in his entry approach. Zach got the payouts, some of his payouts, before he even joined the Black Shirt Club again. You know what I'm saying? It's a different perspective for you, but I still want people to see that.
Yeah, for me, this is like just the accelerated version of touching the stove, right? Like, it's how fast can I fail before I start learning everything I need to learn to actually find progress moving forward.
Yeah, when we look at these stats, average winning trade, 52 minutes. Average losing trade, 17 minutes. That's really good. Largest profit is bigger than largest loss. But like you said, where is it? Average winning trade is smaller than the average losing trade.
Yeah.
The profit factor, 0.69. That's something that we definitely want to look at. Winning days, less than losing days. Now, I know you spent a lot of time with Tom in the Black Shirt Club. This is a benefit of the Black Shirt Club. You get other coaches giving you insights. Shout out to Tom, because he is extremely valuable to all of us for this.
Very.
And you sat with him and literally went through every day that you traded. And you pulled up every markup, and you found instantly some things that stood out of like, let's not do this anymore, and it'll help improve our P&L. What were some of those things?
So don't short. Don't short the indices, unless they break yesterday's lows.
A revolutionary idea here.
And stop trading inside days.
Define the inside day for me.
So inside day is just when we don't break out of yesterday's highs or yesterday's lows. And, you know, big conversation that part of the conversations that we've had lately has just been, you know, indices are bullish. Like, they just want to go up. And there are moments where, they will start to have their bearish, their bearish trend, but few and far between. So just be bullish and don't trade on inside days. Wait for it to break that yesterday's high before you're going to get in, because that's where I've been finding the most success. Where most of my winning trades are. So I think it was just something that stood out for the most part amongst the 100 trades that I took in the past month and a half.
And I have to commend you, because a lot of people, when their stats are in drawdown,
When they're shit?
I wouldn't say they're shit, bro. You're new. Like, what would you expect? Yeah. Like, they're both not in their heads. They know. Like, you can't, 8 months into this, bro, like, if you were killing it, there'd be something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I would send you to New York. Bella Fiore would have picked you up, or Fidelity would have picked you up already. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have to give yourself grace, for real.
Yeah.
But you have to understand, too, a lot of new traders would have stopped doing all of this data collection a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think you actually have a strong advantage going into the next year, because you've felt drawdown before you felt the euphoria of big wins and highs.
True.
I see a lot of traders, he knows, we've had them come through. They win first and then experience drawdowns, and they can never dig out of it. They think that something's broken.
Uh-huh.
Whereas you're already eating the shit. Now, it only goes up from here.
Yeah, true.
And what this does is it gives us, you have more data in here than Zach does. It gives us more to base future decisions off of, like not trading inside days, like not shorting the indices. We actually have data that shows what you're doing well and what you're not doing well. Let's look at your days of the week real quick. Very interesting, right?
Mm.
Trading the most on Thursdays. Thursdays almost is like a break-even day. Yeah. But Wednesdays and Tuesdays seem to chop you up the most. Why do you think that is? Is it something going on in your outside life? Like, what do you think feeds into this?
No, it's really, I think it's more mental fatigue. Again, it's something that I've just been chewing on for, you know, months at this point, or at least the last few months now that a lot of data has been collected. Mm-hmm. I always start the week Monday out strong because mm-hmm. I've had Saturday and Sunday to really, you know, refine everything from the previous week. Where did I go wrong? What did I do right? What can I, you know, what can I look for coming into Monday's market? So I come in Monday super fresh, you know, a lot of patience, you know, waiting for that right setup. I probably, you know, it's not quite the fewest trades I take on Monday, but definitely
fewer
than the rest of the week.
Yep.
And then if I'll have a good Monday, then I try to tack that on to Tuesday. And then Tuesday I'm in drawdown now, or I'm break even, and like, I got to end the week green. So Wednesday I'm taking Slam everything. It. Right. And then, you know, get to Thursday, it's like, oh shit, I blew up on this week's absolute crap. I gotta settle down. And that's where you start to see, like, I still take a lot of trades, but you see it's mostly break even. And then Friday I might be able to eke out a few more wins, but the fewest trades on Friday, and, you know, small green. So it's just, it's that pause between. Now, I don't know if we can glean anything from that data, because obviously you and I, we all know that there are good trades on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It's just, we're going to look at the time of days that I trade.
I know what you're saying. We can take something from this. So this is what I'm making a point. Now, we looked at the days of the week for you. Now we're looking at the performance by time. What this tells me, and I tweeted about this, we've talked about it. You were in Disney with your family this week, so you missed this. But what we've been talking a lot about is capacity. And this muscle in our brain as a new trader, which we'll just call trading capacity.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't talk about it enough, and I think I was a victim of it. And I bet you all of the listeners will resonate with this, just like you guys are nodding your heads, because when you look at the time on the hourly here on the side, you can see the spurts that you do better in, where you have these 2-hour, 1-hour windows where the brain is functioning better. And I saw the same thing in Tanner. All right, we're back, took a quick bathroom break, had to reset the cameras and stuff. So we're looking at Tanner's stats, one of our other Black Shirt Club members, and we're talking about capacity and this muscle in our brains as traders. And you can see it in his stats here, as we just kind of saw with your stats too, Andrew. Look at the 2-hour spurts that Tanner's doing well, 6 to 7, so 6 to 8 really. Then when market open, because this is 8 to 9 Eastern time, market open comes in,
that's right.
8:30 news comes in, he starts losing a ton of money. Then he takes a break, he comes back, trades really well for 2 hours. Then he stays on for longer than the next 2 hours, and he costs himself money. Takes another break, comes back, and he can make money. So this, again, tracking these stats can help us see where is your mental capacity weak. And I think it's identifying it, which brings awareness to it. And then you can be like, okay, I'm a new trader, Andrew, I'm 8 months into this. I'm going to make sure that I don't sit at the desk for more than 2 hours straight. Because I'm seeing in my own trading, I'm seeing in other people's trading, that seems to be the bandwidth. Okay, let's see if that makes an improvement. These are the kind of things that I think we can all kind of like stand on, because they're facts. You can't argue with this stuff. You know what I mean? So I think expanding the bandwidth should be what I would be thinking about if I was in your shoes. How do you do that though?
Well, I mean, there was a point in within the last month or two where I saw that, just like Tanner's stats say, that my performance during the open is crap. So I'm just not going to be at the desk. So I was leaving. I was there in the morning, traded pre-market. When the open came about, I knew that I wasn't really going to go well. So I went, grabbed a workout in the garage, and then came back at like 10:30 when most of my data started saying that I actually, you know, performed a little bit better, and, you know, was just looking for trades at that point in time. And where I started to question myself is, you said, well, you're still going to probably find good setups at the open. So I don't know that I'd be off the desk. So, you know, you're now I've got, you know, two. I got what I want to do, and then I got Austin on my other shoulder saying, you shouldn't leave the desk.
Well, I think what I'm saying by, and you two should chime in on this, but I'm saying maybe not leave the desk, maybe just don't trade and study. Why are you losing money at that period of time? What's going on? So I guess what I'm thinking is, by leaving the desk, you become ignorant to something that could be a
true, right,
important data point. Not that I'm saying to sit there and trade. I'm saying to like pay attention. What news event is moving the market? Why is this news event so volatile, and then the market open is so small this day? Those are still experiences that I find value in, and that's kind of why I pushed you to still stay at the desk, but maybe pause the trading, move into, not trading, even a demo account, move into reading, or move into just listening, and then kind of checking the charts not as frequently,
right,
so the brain can reset. But I also understand, like, some people just want to take a break and walk away.
Well, I mean, you know, my day starts like I'm up at 6, and right. then I get to the desk at like 7 o'clock, and I'm doing my pre-market work of, you know, getting the journal ready and kind of reviewing the charts and whatnot. So by the time the open comes around, I've been looking at the charts for 2.5 hours at some point.
It's a lot.
It can be a lot. Whereas like, you know, walking away and getting the work at it and getting a pump in, or just, you know, working on a sweat and then coming back, it's like kind of euphoric because then. Release the endorphins.
That's how I feel in the afternoon. And then I come into the after my 12 o'clock, come in and trade when he's trading really well, 2, 3, and into 4 o'clock, and I find decent trades.
What I'm really curious to see are Evan's stats.
Let's do Evan next.
Yeah. Because I want to see his performance by the hour, because I don't think I've ever actually looked at Evan's stats.
But real quick before we do that, one thing on your timing, it's like I won't really take a break from like a random time of like 10 to 11. It'll usually be like, okay, I did a morning session of like 3-4 hours, like he's doing. I'll go work out and come back in the afternoon and like, it's a totally new session. I'm not even thinking about the morning, really, where it's like I'm not going to randomly take off at 9:30 to 10:30 and just miss out on an hour.
Yeah.
It's like treating it like two sessions, where if you're taking off an hour during the New York Open, that's still the same session. So for me, it's like, okay, let me just take a break. I know I'm not going to trade now. There's news at, let's say, not the Open's at 9:30. There's news at 10. Okay, I'm probably not going to trade for the next half an hour. I don't really need to eyeball it every second. Yeah. Let me do some work, but I'm still here if something happens or I do jump into a trade. So just managing your time of like, I don't need to be thinking and analyzing. I'm like, am I going to get in now? Like, you can still be trading, like, at the desk. But you don't need to be in the zone of, like, I'm going to take one any minute now.
Yeah, and then, you know, knowing myself, I guess it's, like, I'm still green where I can kind of, like, sucker myself into taking those trades if I'm sitting there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't have enough data to really say. Like, I did at one point, like, I was at the desk 7 to 9. Gone 9 to 10, there from 10 to like noon, and then I was off the desk until like 2 o'clock, and I'd trade like 2 to 4, or at least have the charts up 2 to 4, looking to see what was there. And like that split seemed to work. So, but again, you know, 8 months in, I'm still trying to feel out like where the timing actually fits. You know, I'm not going to get up at 3 a.m. like Zach is. And you're looking
well,
at the
not going to anymore.
I would say, though, that, you know, when you are as green as you're saying, like you're 8 months in, there's so much value in just like taking bad trades and watching the price action. Like, I've spent hours and hours watching 1 minute candles to the point that you start to really understand the nuances. And to be honest, when you have a trade on, even if it's small size, you watch it even more closely. And for me, it helps because like you're paying attention to it more than if you were just more passively like checking the charts, looking back.
Right. You know? You're studying the price like action.
Everything you're doing
bars.
As a new trader in the first year is good, in my opinion.
I agree.
Like, there's just so much.
You really can't go wrong.
Exactly.
In the first year.
True.
Especially when we're talking about trading prop firm funding companies.
Yeah, where it's like
the downside is capped.
Right.
You can't be like me, where you're digging yourself into debt just funding accounts. That's what I did. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
These prop firms, I paid the $500. I got the account. However long it takes me to pass or fail this, it's already been lost. The money's already out the door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Here's Evan's stats. So what do we take from this? Crushing it after the open.
Yeah.
And that's like, I mean, this is probably a while ago now, but I would probably be at the desk 6 a.m. and then now I'm waking up at 6 and I'm not really even opening Trading View until like 7:30, 8 o'clock. So like I looked at my own stats. I'm like, why am I even waking up so early? I shouldn't be taking a trade this early, so I'm just waking up for no reason. And it's benefited me. Like, yeah, I'm not at the desk to trade, so I'm not going to take a early move.
Did that change for you when we switched from Forex to indices?
No, a little Forex, bit? It was kind of similar, like just trying to force something at 7 a.m. It's like, you're going to be here for like 4 more hours. It doesn't have to be right now.
I just think Forex is not the same type of a market as a futures market on an indice, where you have an inclination. Like Tom told us, 55% of the day is on ES. Over the last 1,000 bars, it closes bullish. So we know 55% of the time it's going to be a bullish bar. So that helps give a bias. Boris just sat here and said the same stat, 55% of ins heard it. Same number. So this is clearly something that is known. Then shout out to Tori Trades. She was on the podcast before. Tori put up a post saying that people like her, not necessarily her, I won't put words in her mouth, but she was saying people have been having a hard time buying indices as we've been breaking for new all-time highs. And I commented on it. My comment got a bunch of likes and I laughed a bit because I can so much relate to that. Of being the guy that's like, there's no way it keeps breaking for all-time highs. There's no way. I've got to sell it. Those guys get smoked. Those guys end up, I said to Boris and he laughed. I said, those guys have no hair. The reason we know Boris is a long trader is because he still has his hair. And it looks good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's tough when you're comparing Forex to indices because they are such different beasts. Where a Forex pair, look at what UBS or Deutsche or any of the big banks give for a forecast on their currency pairs. They're going to say EURUSD will trade between 1.14 and 1.13, 100 pips. That's the range they'll think it'll end between the end of the year. When then you compare it to, like, example, like a stock or even the index. The index people, like the guys that are analysts that are probably not traders, they just pick prices as targets. It's a much wider range of price targets because there's so many more variables that contribute into what moves that market. Where, like, again, a Forex pair, everyone wants to tell me, I'm sure there'll be comments of people trying to tell me they know what moves the Forex market. That's fine. Truthfully, though, what I see, and from talking to podcast guests, Forex is a hedge. Big institutions are using these currency crosses for hedge, not for active trades with momentum and volatility.
Yeah.
So when you know that, it's like, I don't even want to be involved in their hedge or their moving of capital from dollars to yen because they have to do business. And I don't want to be involved in that. I want to be involved in a market that I typically know the direction and that it's going to have volatility. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Forex is much more of a mean reverting market.
Oh, 100. It hits the bottom of that range, right to the top.
They're stuck in these macro ranges for like decades.
Exactly. Yeah. Why are you making so much money on Fridays?
I just like to go out with a bang.
No, but seriously, why do you think this is? It's your least traded day, but your most profitable day.
Oh my. I mean, a lot of it was across like a few accounts, but and like all started at different periods, so it's interesting for me to even look at it. But I remember that when I was being very selective and very picky with my trades, I would be flat like on a month. It could be Monday through Thursday, I could be flat. And like I was able to stick around and find a good setup on a Friday rather than maybe trade Monday through Thursday, whether there was trades or not, and then have to try to dig myself out of drawdown on a Friday or I'm up on a going into a Friday. So like, let me try to make even more. Like I was able to go into a Friday, like just calm, cool and collected and just find a good setup if it presented.
What do you make of this?
What is this for? The
symbols? This is trade distribution by instrument. Yeah, so it's showing Bitcoin as your second most traded asset, but not really close to SPX. And SPX is giving you a hard time, more of a hard time than even Forex pairs lately. Why do you think this is?
I have a guess.
You have a guess?
I do.
Let's hear it.
Once we got into indices, it was shortly after that we started really focusing on VWAP. And I haven't seen you hyper-focused on A2s off of Asian range, low or high. Or
that was all Forex.
Yeah, but you were taking some trades like that on SPX when we started pulling the indices.
Yeah, yeah, but
you
before were trading VWAP, well. I haven't really taken a 15-minute trade since the VWAP.
And I'm not trying to say that you were trading the VWAP poorly. It's just I haven't seen you look for the A2s off those zones in a long time.
Yeah, that's what I've definitely been working on recently of like, not trying to stray away from the VWAP, like the break of, but I do skip a lot of the A2s just because I'm not waiting for that A2 to be confirmed with the VWAP break where it's like, I kind of know where I want to go today and this is the better price. Yeah. So like, can I be a little bit more lenient and wait, get the A2 and then hope it breaks that VWAP and now I'm in the right move. But I'll also say this probably, SPX is probably all from January where I did take quite a few punches from SPX in January. Yep. Or no, February.
February.
Yeah, January started off good, and then February pretty much gave it all back.
When you look at something like this, to me, like NASDAQ is still performing well, and that's the third most traded asset. You can see there's not a lot of Forex trades happening here, which is good because you kind of left that.
Okay.
But Boris, like I said, was just sitting here talking to me about NASDAQ is the one most people trade.
Yeah.
You trade NASDAQ more than you trade ES, right?
Oh, yeah. I barely touch ES now.
Why?
For me, it's just... it's just faster. Like ES, again, I like to know if I'm going to win and know if I'm going to lose quick. And sure. ES, I could still get caught up in holding a trade for 30 minutes to an hour.
Would you prefer oil?
Yeah, I like oil because I feel like it's kind of in the middle between ES and NASDAQ because NASDAQ can be dangerous on the futures contract. You know, you're trading one E-mini. I mean, 50 ticks with just one is $250 and NASDAQ can move 50 ticks in a minute.
Right.
No problem.
Right.
So I've kind of found my sweet spot with CL a little more because it is volatile, but it's in between. It's a little more stable.
What do you think, Andy?
Oil? No, not for me.
I was going to say, we've tried that.
Yeah,
we went down that rabbit hole.
Especially if you're trading it on the CFD firms, I mean, the spread is just insane.
The spreads,
you can't be doing it with CFDs.
The spreads were tough, but the other thing that got me is that I'd find these really good setups that just all of a sudden would tank like immediately for no reason. Like even just like on higher time frames and shorter time frames, it looked like, you know, trend was pushing one direction. And we've looked at a couple of the trades that I took. Like, there was nothing wrong with the setups. It's just fundamentals would come into play and blow me away. Like, and I just don't, I like to, I'd much rather just be trading the technicals and have to worry about the fundamental side of things.
Yeah, that can happen with oil.
So,
there can
yeah,
be breaking
it just,
news.
It got tough. Like, just tougher for me in my, at this stage of the game.
So,
getting into it.
We have to look at my stats now.
Absolutely.
I can't be the one roasting everybody and not get roasted myself. So one thing I would say when we look at mine, let's go to trade time first. I have hurt myself, as you can see, in two areas, trading too early and too late in the day. So I think what this shows me is like I have my capacity. I haven't really been trading a lot at 4 a.m., as you can see here. But I, like there's what? How many trades? One trade, right? So that one trade made me money. Most of the trading you can see is New York Open, but also in the afternoon I have that second spurt. So you can see, if I can, whoops, if I could break this down properly. There we go.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of yours was like when you were doing those little like secretive plays almost of like late afternoon, like not your session, like almost at night pretty much. It was like those are the ones where you're just trying to almost predict what would happen the next day, or like hoping with good merit, but like you were hoping, and you're like, the price I did it at was wrong. Like yeah, it happened later on that next session when you would have been at the desk.
Yep.
But like when you place it overnight, it's kind of just like you're waking up, you're not getting a good night's sleep first of all.
But look at how much money I'm making at 9 o'clock versus how much money I'm, how many trades I'm taking at 9 o'clock. It's my most traded hour and my least profitable, one of my least profitable. Oh, so I have like this 7 to 9 a.m. window that I seem to do well. And then from like 10 to 1, I also can do well. But like 2, 3, 4 o'clock, it's not really where I'm doing well. Yeah. So like that's pretty interesting, different than Zach.
I was going to say, unlike Zach, where he's crushing it.
Into those last 2 hours.
Yeah. The power.
Yep.
Power.
If we look at it by instrument, clearly dominated on SPX and ES because that's what we just been looking at the most. Yeah. Bitcoin and micro Bitcoin not hurting me or are hurting me a little bit, but not too much. And then if we go back to the overall report, average win is just barely a little bit longer than my average loss. An hour and 52 minutes versus an hour and 14 minutes.
That even seems long.
That, yeah.
That seems very high.
But that's because I always have a piece.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. It's true. I typically will leave a piece to run. You know what I mean?
But even like that, like what does that say about your losing trades? The fact that you're still in those an hour and 14 minutes later, like
sucks ass.
Just doesn't.
No, but
accept the loss.
You're not accepting the loss, but like I'm not closing. I'm getting stopped out. Like I don't see that as getting stopped out.
I got better stops sometimes. Well, I got wider stops, which is what we've been working on.
Yeah.
I want to pull up one of these trades that we actually mentioned earlier. Let me see if I can get it quickly. So we talked about how there are trades that I will take and other people will lose money, but because of my stop loss placement or because of the way I manage the trade, I'm able to squeak out. I think this is it. Yeah, look at that. So I'm buying the break of the
low of day.
Low of day VWAP and the daily VWAP. You see the long. Yeah. You see it take on some serious drawdown. If I would have used this more recent structure here as the stop loss, I would have been tapped. Mm-hmm. Right, Andy?
Mm-hmm.
But I went lower to the previous structure, which allowed me to take the drawdown and close the trade, as you can see, at 359 in profit right before the close. Then what happened at 4 o'clock? Dumped on me. Could you be reactionary and get short and then get long again and then get short? Absolutely. But again, with just a proper stop loss and then knowing where I'm at in the time of the day, this is probably one of those examples.
Yeah.
Where you look at it, you're like, how did you make
money?
Yeah,
there's the one recently on like literally the New York Open, a pin was like all it went into profit and you snagged it before the New York Open, and a few of our traders in the BSC or even A-Specs VIP just held it because it still wasn't at 1R, and the New York Open comes in and it sends the ball to the stop loss, and there's a few when you're buying it underneath the daily.
Look
but
at
like
that.
With good merit.
Look at that, bro.
That. It's like,
shout out to my stop loss and my trade management.
Like you weren't really correct on the longs. Yes, it went a little bit higher than your entry price, obviously, but like you would look at that and be like, oh, he was right. It did go higher.
But
no, but you still made money.
I still made money. And again, it's just knowing that I'm in the right bias. I know what time of day it is. So I know there's going to be volatility. And I even said it. Either I was on, was this a Tuesday or a Wednesday? It's your on stream.
Yeah, this is my stream.
So I said it. I'm pretty sure in the Black Shirt Club, I said, if it pops, I'm getting out.
Yeah.
And that's what it did.
I mean, that's where your discretion comes in from years of market experience and just watching, like I said before, just watching price action develop in real time over and over again. You had a feeling right there. And
also,
that's just intuition.
It is, but also look at earlier in the day. I was long at that same price pre-market. So why wouldn't I buy it again here? I don't know that it's going to do this pin and fall over. I know that I have a belief that that long price is still now valid because we didn't run away from it and we also didn't break for a new low. So that's where I'm going to look at this and say, I've got a stop here at that previous low. You can see the pins there at 815. That's clearly the stop. So we're going to run this and see if the full move comes in now and we're going to push higher. So it's not so much that I'm even attached to the full outcome or a part of the outcome. It's the price. I'm attached to that price until it's invalid. And I think if you're listening this far into the episode, one of the things that has helped me and all of us, especially, I know Andrew and Evan, if we don't take out the previous day low on an index, just stay looking for longs. Now, I know because you trade ICT, it's going to be different, mm-hmm. where you'll be short and I'll be long and we'll both make money. Mm-hmm. What do you think the reason for that is? Why is it that sometimes these ICT guys, I see them on the opposite side of the trade?
Well, the way I trade, at least, is I like to trade towards previous day's high or previous day's low as the draw in liquidity. So I'll have a few different ways of looking at that. Like one really helpful daily bias tip for me, for an ICT trader, is watch the previous day's daily close. If the previous day's candle closes above the last previous day's, you can have a bias to look for previous day's high to be taken, and vice versa.
Why? Do you know? Is there a reason for that?
There's just, I don't know the exact data on it, but if you just go back and look at the chart, you'll see if we close above the previous day's high, we'll probably take out previous day's high again. Mm-hmm. If we close below, we'll take out previous day's low. And it.
On what instruments do you know? Or is it just any?
I do it with indices.
With indices.
So I'm not sure about oil, FX. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. What do you think about that? You're making a face.
It's fascinating information. It's something I want to go take a peek at and see how often that actually happens and see mm-hmm. if it's something that I can't find an edge in.
Do you look at the way that he trades and try to take from it?
So, yeah, actually, I have. So once you got back into the group, and he'll confirm it, I just started, you know, quizzing him on, you know, what's going on with your trades, what are you looking at, how are you trying to trade this, like what are these zones that you're looking at? And I went down the YouTube rabbit hole of trying to, you know, understand some of these concepts and looking at them more so on the chart. And I think that there is value into adding that. And I think who was it? We had somebody on the podcast who I think was trading the ICT with
Dom.
Dom, yeah, Dom Pips. That's right.
Shout out to Dom.
Yeah, man. And so like I can kind of see how there's a correlation between the two signals. You know that you know two methods that you can kind of combine. And find a way to find an edge in. And it's not to say that I'll figure it out. And obviously you have you've created your own edge. Everybody has an edge, right? So yeah, I just wanted. And we got into this early. Like you left the Blackshirt Club because you wanted to go on this you know journey of trying to figure out like what else is there to add to your technical analysis. And like that's kind of, I want to continue to be part of this group because I believe in the A1, the A2, and I believe that everybody here is trying to get better as a trader. So that's what I love about being in the group. It's not necessarily about any one specific strategy. I mean, Tom's got something totally off the wall right now that is so heavily backtested and he swears by it. Shout out Tom and his new method. But I want to continue to be part of this group and I want to continue to study every method that's out there. So when you came in and you were finding success, it's like, I want to understand that. I want to understand what you're doing. So when I look at your trades, I can see what he's trading. Same thing with Evan. It's like, I know Evan's play when I look at it on the chart, whether it's an A1, an A2, or ASFX strategy or not, I see it. And everybody's got their brand, basically.
Yeah.
And
the group is so much more valuable than just being given a strategy.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I mean, That's why I came back. I mean, I'm not trading like anyone in the group, but there's so much value in just being a part of the group and being around people that care.
Yep. Do you think it's possible to be a profitable trader completely on your own?
I think you got to be a special type of person. I think that's you're talking about
what kind
like
of special.
No, I just mean I think you got to be like the 1-5% of profitable traders out there that can do it. I think everybody else, whether they know it or not, whether it's even if they're doing it alone, they're not doing it alone. They're probably they're following somebody on Twitter. They're following somebody on YouTube. They're reading books. Like, just because you're alone and you don't have a group that you're going to every day, if you're reading a book, they're kind of your mentor. You're not doing it alone. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody can just totally green sit in front of a chart and be like, let me just figure this out without any additional information whatsoever. Everybody's got somebody that can help them.
What do you think?
I think you could, but there's like partially it's like, well, why would you want to anyways? Of like, do you, are you that introverted and that isolated that you prefer to be alone all hours of the day and like just focus strictly on your work? I could see some benefits in it, but there's less accountability, so that you might not know what to fix as quickly as someone might point it out to you. Of like, I keep seeing you make this same mistake, or you know you're making that same mistake, but no one's really pushing you to really change it because maybe you're just getting lazy with yourself or something like that. But I think you can do it by yourself. And I said this a while ago on a lot of podcasts, how it's like you go, was it faster alone, but you go further together. Like, I don't think you go faster alone. I think it might be possible, but it's not going to be quicker by any means. Like, it could just take the same amount of time if you're around a group of people similar to you, not trading the same way as you. Like, it just makes it more enjoyable as well. Mm-hmm. So it makes it feel like it's going a little bit faster and a little bit more enjoyable.
Right. Yeah. When I'm on a losing streak, I'm losing with everybody.
You're just going to be talking to yourself for hours.
Imagine being stuck on your own.
That's not going to be healthy. Yeah, you're just talking negatively to yourself because there's no one around.
I was going
to
say, let's look at some of the other Blackshirt Club members and see their stats. So here's Kurt. Kurt has been on the podcast already.
Yeah.
I think he's got probably one of the best equity curves since last year that we have seen in the Blackshirt Club. 65% trade win rate, 2.2 profit factor, daily win rate, 88%. That's higher than me. Look at his average win to loss, 1.17. So at an average win to loss of 1.17 and a 65% win rate, you can see why he's profitable.
He said three red days.
It's crazy.
And like 65 is good, that's great. But like you would think maybe with a 65, you still have a little bit more red days, but three is across November. That's
look at his entire February here, right? Three trades, one trade, three trades, two trades, one trade, two trades, one trade, one trade, three trades, one trade. Never does he trade more than three trades a day.
And, or 3 days a week, really.
Or 3 days a week. And on the days he has three trades, look at the P&L. 104, 150, and then the three trades at the bottom, he made 1.1. But those days where he is trading more, he's not making substantially more money. But then look, like on the 9th, two trades, 4K. Mm-hmm. 20th, one trade, 1.4K. You can see the month is made in just a couple of days. The 23rd, almost $1,000 there. The 29th, 1.2. So, like, it's just incredible. Let's take a look at his report.
Kurt's my hero. I can't wait for him to move to the States.
He is. He's coming back. He's coming to Phoenix.
Yeah. Anyway, he's in the...
That's a good example of, like, 80% of your profits just really come from, like, 20% of your trades or even your ideas of, like...
Even the work. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's not taking a consistent, like, $1,000 out of the market every day. Maybe sometimes he'll scrape 200, but then when he wins bigger, and then that makes up your month.
Average winning time, 34 minutes. Average losing time, 11 minutes. Largest profit is 2,000. Largest loss is smaller, 1,500. Average winning day is bigger than his average losing day. That's interesting. So it's the same in the sense of my stats of like stacking small wins. Average daily P&L is $500, but a 2.2 profit factor. Total trading days, 26. Winning days, 23. Jeez. That's amazing.
It's killer. Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, Kurt.
Oh, Kurt. I mean, we love you, Kurt.
Like, I would say he would agree that he doesn't necessarily need, he trades our systems, but.
Oh, yeah, it's all A2.
More like coaching, per se. It's really just he still needs to be around the group, not wanting to trade by himself.
Yeah.
That's like, there are traders that are performing very, very well, and they just need the community around them, and they like ours.
Let's do James Robert Bruce in the flesh. 76% trade win rate, 1.2 profit factor, 80% daily win rate. Average win loss, this is more like mine, 0.4. But at a 76% win rate, that's still making you money.
And also look at those 3 days are going to skew that a little bit.
Look at three big blow-up days that you can see there on the right side. Definitely. Look at his February. Two red days the entire month of February. Mm-hmm. They're big. But like, look at the next day. Both of them, after the both red days, he makes it back the next day and some.
Yeah.
I just
love that equity curve that he has. It just shows like your drawdown. Like he was able to keep calm, cool, collected, and climb out of that.
Yeah. Because that goes back to last summer. Like, this is his stats till August of 2023.
So really?
It's good data. Yeah, look at the date at the bottom.
Yeah, remember there was one drawdown where it was like 6%.
Yeah.
And then many people would want to like probably put 2% on a trade and get it back in three trades or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But like, he literally just chipped away at it, being like, okay, that wasn't the right approach. I went too aggressive with the size, the trades I was taking. So he dug himself a quick hole. Mm-hmm. And so many people would dig a bigger hole by trying to get back the next day or the next week. But like, he was very, very long-term focus of like, I obviously screwed up on that day, but let me not make it worse or be greedy and try to get it all back and erase it all quickly.
It's such a good example of how making the, like, we are going to make those mistakes no matter how good at trading you are. It's like being human.
Yep.
But it's just how you deal with it, and you don't need to lose everything when you make those mistakes.
What else can you take when you look at somebody like James, who's been trading for so long and still doesn't have like outsized gains? You know what I mean? Like, from my perspective, it's not like he has super huge days, like similar to you, where like he would have a bunch of losses and then make it back. So as a guy like you that only has a 14-20% win rate, is there anything you can take from James? I know it's saying error right now, but
yeah, I just think the we trade so differently, but I really appreciate the way he's able to like get out of his losers quickly, which is in a way kind of how I trade.
Yeah.
He pulls losers quick, mm-hmm. and then he also pulls winners at the right time, like based off intuition. It's so weird how we can trade totally differently, but I think a bit of the philosophy is similar, like just wanting to keep the losses smaller than the wins.
Yeah,
there's similarities everywhere.
Here we have Ryan. Ryan's a new member in the Black Shirt Club. 75% trade win rate, 1.8 profit factor, 66% daily win rate. And again, a little bit on the average win to loss, a little bit under one. But since he joined the Black Shirt Club in the beginning of February, that equity curve looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's stellar.
Let's take a look at February. So a couple of red days, but nothing outsized, really. He lost...
Not at all, really.
No. Let's take a look at his report. Okay. Average win is smaller than his average loss, and his average loss is holding longer than his average win. So those are two areas, like as we're looking at this, of what to improve on. That's what I would look at first. Getting out of the losers faster, holding the winners a little longer, and getting the average winning trade up bigger, closer to that average losing trade at minus 800. What do you guys see?
I mean, can you go to his... I'd be interested in like his time of day, because he's California, right? Is he trading London or just New York?
He's only trading New York pre-market now.
Yeah, so six. That's going to be converted to his time, 6 a.m.?
That is all data. It's shown in Los Angeles time. So that's 5 a.m., 6 a.m. his time, okay. Which is like
so
8
New York Open.
Yep, New York Open. That's where he's been doing really well. And then if you look by instrument, Bitcoin, NASDAQ, SPX. That's where he's doing really well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, if he was trading FX or indices.
Yeah.
I can't help but be jealous.
Why?
He's somebody who's found an edge in the open. I wish I could trade the open. I just don't.
Oh, I think you could.
I could. I just don't. Right now, I just don't have an edge there. When the market's that volatile, I can't pick it out.
I think you have to be quicker with your take profit, as we've just showed with that
more
trade.
More aggressive, for sure.
You've got to be quicker with the take profit into the open. Yeah, like here's a trade, 9:43. That's right after the open. Almost stopped out. Doesn't get stopped. Then he gets full 1R on that. You'll notice if you study his trades, very, very patient, where he's not cutting these trades too quickly.
Yeah.
On the upside, he is cutting the losers very quickly in some senses, but in other senses, as you can see from the stats.
I was going to say, we just saw that his losers are held on longer than the winners.
Like this one he should have gotten out of. You can see.
Yeah.
Bitcoin, let's see this one. Whoo, that's a ripper.
Damn.
There was that. It's so like how many people, and you're looking at that first one where that first A2 signal is, you're probably putting your stop there, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you are. I know the answer. I was just asking.
I know what your degenerate ass is going to do.
You're going to put it there. Yeah, and yes, probably. In this case, that survives, so you could be like, oh, well, then he could have made 4R. And it's like, okay, yeah, true, whatever.
So,
but more times than not, is that going to happen, or is it going to pull back a little bit and either scare you out before it hits your stop loss, just because your stop loss was closer, where I bet if you take drawdown on this, you're not really sweating it too much because it's not super close to tapping you out for a full loss.
Exactly. I was just going to say, I mean, granted, if I had my stop loss tight on that first structure where that first A2 is, I'd probably be at 1R on that pop just because of how there's the risk reward at that price. But yeah, if I were looking to hold on to that and then I see it just kind of like make that lower high and then a lower low just structurally coming down, like still technically like overall higher low, but in drawdown. Like I'm halfway to my stop loss at that point. So if I didn't take anything off, now I'm getting nervous. I'm probably closing half. I don't know if I'm going to be able to add back in. I mean, now we're just getting into the psychology the mistakes that I make. But
it would sound like you can get out of that too tight of a stop loss leads to mismanagement of the trade.
Sure.
Because it's not like an exit at that price would be an invalidation of this idea to be long.
Exactly.
This is a break of a high of day VWAP making higher highs and higher lows. This is what Brian Shannon says, buyers are in control. So yeah. I don't think you're invalid until where he has his stop, until that level is taken out, back to the daily VWAP in green.
No, and this is where we start getting into like where I have an issue more so on the mental aspect of things in terms of trade management, because I see
if I do take the tight stop loss and I'm heavily into drawdown, which isn't even really that heavy looking at a trade like that, it's like, you know, I get too nervous and I close things out too quickly. Whereas, you know, yeah, I do. And I have notes on this too, like, which is just, it's so silly and so stupid. Like, I know for a fact, if I had a big stop loss and we've done some trades like that, I'll just sit through the drawdown because it's like, you know, if it's just going to chop right here, I have that level right there. As soon as it breaks that level, I'll get out. But for right now, I can just sit comfortably.
What about this one? You can see he closes 50% of this one in drawdown at the open. But look at, like, again, if you were Andrew,
yep,
you're going with this pin right here as the stop.
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah, that pin is much tighter, where you're just going to be full out of the trade here at the open versus, yeah, his stop. He gets some off, sees how it reacts, and then he gets to mitigate that loss a little bit.
I hate saying gamble, but I definitely gamble a little too much with stop losses in certain spots.
Why do you frame it as gambling?
Because I want to see a higher RR. Like, looking at a trade like that where we kind of have a level up top that, mm-hmm, could be the barrier. Mm-hmm. I like to see maybe 2R to that level instead of like 1.7R,
sure,
to that level.
Like this one. He takes this trade an hour before the open. 70% of the trade is closed in profit at like 4 points instead of 5 for his full take profit. And then he gets stopped at the open. And that's the typical volatility that I would say you see at the open.
Oh, yeah.
You've been looking at the open for a long time. Do you find, if you had to guess, more days, does it run straight at the open, chop, or reverse? Where would you put your bet?
I'd bet that it's going to sweep out some liquidity first during the open. You know, you really can't hold on to, at least for me, it's hard for me to hold on to higher risk-reward profit targets if I'm getting in at the open. I actually prefer to wait like the first hour of the day, which actually is also part of a concept that I follow using the defining range, which is 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. I like to see what price action forms inside that range, and then I have a better idea on what direction I'm looking for.
Interesting. So we've talked now for an hour and a half, Vince, something like that, on technicals, risk management. We didn't really get into the funding company stuff. So I think we pause, wrap up this episode, and let's do a second episode. Doesn't have to be the full hour if we don't need it to be, but I think we need time to discuss the approach on getting funded, the futures versus the CFDs. I think we need to discuss that.
So true.
We made the time for this today, so let's pause. So for the listeners, thank you for staying all the way through. We appreciate you. Make sure you're subscribed. We're going to drop I don't even call it a part 2. It's just another episode as a foursome.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go play golf. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to drop another episode right after this one. So make sure you're subscribed. I'll probably have Vince make sure we post it relatively close. We won't wait the full week if we don't have to. But if you have any questions for any of the guys, if you're interested in joining the Blackshirt Club, you know how to get a hold of us. All of their socials are going to be linked down in the description. I want you guys to connect with them. It's hard to find real traders, and especially traders who have real credibility from other people. Like, again, I'm saying these are 2 guys, 3 guys that you should be following. So you don't find that too often. These aren't Lambo boys. I mean, Zach skates. Do you have Bugatti skates?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Of course.
So make sure you follow the guys. I appreciate them, and I know you guys do too. So stay subscribed. We'll be back with part 2.